Welcome to Horror Makes Us Happy, the podcast where we ask the question, what is it about horror that makes us happy? Your hosts are Steve Becker and myself, Chris Whitman, and you can find out more about us at our website, horrormakesushappy.com.
.com.
Today. Wait, that's a different one. Anyway, before we get started, this is the trigger warning. This is a horror podcast. We talk about horror things, so we could delve into sensitive subjects, and there will be... there will be foul language. It's not guaranteed that we will delve into
almost
sensitive...
Almost certainly.
There will almost certainly be foul language. And that's part of the fun.
Yes.
But yes, we do like to add the trigger warning at the beginning just to inform people that, you know, we could potentially talk about those things. So if that's not your cup of tea, go listen to something boring. Mm. Also, we do want to thank our Patreon supporters. Steve and I have both lived paycheck to paycheck, so we definitely appreciate how meaningful it can be to offer even a dollar here or there. That being said, Patreon does also offer a free tier, so you can help out without even giving money, you know. Mm-hmm. Roll out that whole money thing altogether.
Yes.
So if you can't offer financial support, you can still sign up for the free tier or do things like liking, sharing, subscribing, all that fun stuff. Yep. And with that out of the way, what are we doing, Steve?
We are recording a podcast. And then after we record this podcast, then tonight after we leave here, we're going over to Discord and hosting a listen party and a drawing party. There are links to Discord and a number of other things on our website. As Chris said, horrormakesushappy.com. There's a Linktree link on there that you can click on, and that'll take you all kinds of different stuff. But today we are talking to Mr. Jason Stein, podcaster best known for being part of the Dads from the Crypt podcast, but also has been on the How Not to Make a Movie podcast. Welcome, Jason.
Hello, boils and ghouls.
Oh, can you do the laugh?
No,
don't do the laugh.
Could, but don't.
Yeah.
Basically, the theme of our podcast is we are going to be talking about your love of the genre from childhood through adulthood. And then at the end, we'll talk about any common themes that have cropped up multiple times. That said, it's not meant to be a therapy session. So if there's any questions you don't want to answer, just say pass and move on. But starting with childhood, what are some of your earliest memories of scary things?
Just for clarification, I was born in 81.
It's a good year.
But I was a real scary, scaredy cat growing up. But I kind of watched a lot of the like Universal movies that were on TV that my dad was watching, and then a lot of like Godzilla and stuff. But I was the kind of kid that would get upset when the monster dies at the end.
Okay.
I was like, they still understand him, you know, when Frankenstein dies or when Godzilla, you know, gets, you know, deoxygenated or whatever, whichever movie you're watching. And I did love like Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. I thought that's still one of my, you know, all time favorites. And Mel Brooks, a Young Frankenstein. Again, my last name is Stein, so my dad had a very good sense of humor. So he had me convinced of two things as a child. The first one was that I was also in Jedi training.
Okay.
Again, this is pre like Photoshop, but he made me a Jedi certificate.
Nice.
Okay. That I think my mom has laminated somewhere. And that whenever I did a family tree for school, I made a special branch for my uncle, Frank.
Frankenstein.
Nice.
So my family's always had a large Frankenstein obsession, fetish, whatever you want to call it.
Affection.
Affection. Yeah, one of those words. You said this doesn't need to be therapy, but hey, if it's free, I'll take it.
Exactly.
We don't recommend. We don't require that you recline on a couch, but it is recommended.
We're not asking you to, but we're also not stopping you.
Are you requiring me to put my pants back on?
Well, no, that's optional.
Okay, that's why we're not doing this on video.
Great. No, I am holding right now my mouse pad.
Thank you.
Which is a Boris Karloff Frankenstein stamp.
Nice.
From my dad got it from Universal Studios in 1997.
Okay.
Wow. So again, that's how deep this runs. And actually a couple of years ago, maybe a year ago or so, my wife decided to give it a cleaning. So it was actually like restored.
Oh, okay. I thought you were gonna say she messed it up by accident.
No. It looks amazing. But you can imagine, you know, 30 plus years of, you know, wrists sweat.
Yes.
Yeah, that do happen over time. I just get cheap ones that I just throw away and replace.
Yeah. So yeah, Frankenstein has always been a big love of mine. So I like sci-fi stuff. So like my earliest more modern horror definitely came about, and again, this was in the 80s, so I still had like a black and white TV. Those were like, you know, still pretty common back then. Like, you know, we had the main TV that was in color, and then I had like a smaller black and white TV that like we had in our kind of the kids' room.
It's the older TV that you still kept after you bought the new color one.
Yeah, exactly. And then you take that TV and it becomes yours, and you move it into your bedroom when you become a teen. Like, did it have one of those pull out power on buttons?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I can hear it now.
Punk. So I remember watching very specifically during a snowstorm. Mm-hmm. I want to say, I feel like it was within the same week. I saw like the television premiere of Aliens. Ooh. Again, I hadn't seen Alien, but I saw Aliens. Mm-hmm. And this was like the main premiere where they had like the extra footage with like the sentry guns and stuff.
Yeah.
That, and I watched the 80, I think it's 88 remake of The Blob.
Nice. Yeah. That's a great
one. Those are probably like the two quote modern horror movies I saw, and they, you know, both scared the crap out of me. You know, I must have been either 9, something around there. It's definitely before 1990.
Yeah.
So that was kind of dipping my toe, but that was a time where, you know, Jason and Freddy were like, you know, all over the place on commercials and everything. And I was scared shitless of that. I was like terrified. If I saw the box cover at the VHS store, I'd like run away. And then my real horror awakening is when Scream came out.
Yeah.
And that was like the right time, and it was all the buzz and everything. And I didn't even see it initially, because I remember I saw it at the second run theater at some point. So it must have been at least a month or two after it came out. But I saw it just because it was what everyone else was seeing, and with the big buzz it had. Mm. And I saw it a couple nights later again, and I stayed for two showings. Because my friends worked at the theater, so you can just do shit like that. Yeah. They didn't care.
Right.
Like, they would let us up in the projection booth, and we'd like run our hands over the screen for certain movies to fuck with people. Yeah. Anyways, but Scream was my like awakening to horror. Cause it wasn't like too scary. At least there wasn't like crazy monsters and stuff, but there were so many references. That was like my Rosetta Stone of looking up other horror movies. So like, I used that movie to go look for The Town That Dreaded Sundown, which was referenced in, you know, pretty much everything that they referenced in there.
Yeah.
I like made it a goal. I don't think I consciously wrote the movies down that they referenced, but I definitely like in my head, I had the movie pretty much memorized.
Right.
And that was when I started deep diving into horror.
Okay. And that would have been teens, I guess.
Yeah, that was teens. I was in high school, either sophomore, junior. And then I think the next big milestone was I was doing a health occupations class. And one of the things that we were going to do was a ride along in an ambulance.
Okay.
Again, this was before GPS. So I had like one of those maps, these maps, but they're kind of divided and they're all like in the big book. So you had to like piece together one edge to another. So it's like this edge is like 33B. Then you have to scroll through and find, you know, the next map that's connected to. I got lost trying to find the hospital. So I stopped at a Burger King to call my dad to see if he could help me. And then I locked my keys in the car. So then I had to go back in and call my dad and have him come pick me up. Anyways, I was really pissed off about that. I was just having a shitty night. So I went to the video store to just find a random ass movie to watch. And I happened to pick up this movie with this big knife and a leather writing home from summer camp that I always seen in the shells called Sleepaway Camp. Mm-hmm. And that movie is like absorbed. Sometimes you watch a movie and it like absorbs into your soul. It just fits you. And I was the kind of kid that went to a handful of summer camps, but I liked more being a counselor at summer camps, like a junior counselor, I guess, at that time.
Okay.
And what disappointed me about a lot of camp horror movies was that they never really, really set at camp, or if they were, they were just with the counselors or with adults. They didn't really have the kids. And again, being, you know, relatively the same age as a lot of the kids, that's what I was looking for. And that's the one that I found. And that's become one of my all-time favorite movies.
Okay. You're right, though. They do always kind of focus on the campers, and they never have like movies that focus on... they don't focus on the campers. They focus on the counselors. And you don't see that in horror movies. You see it in all like the fun comedy movies.
Mm-hmm. Well, because they're too afraid to kill the kids. I'm like, no, that's what I'm here for.
Well, pussies. Not only that, but the kids... in most cases it probably aren't the intended audience. So
right. What?
10-year-olds can't watch slashers?
Well, have you guys seen The Blob remake?
Yes.
I have.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah, well, there's that great scene with the kids going to see the slasher movie.
Oh yeah.
In the theater. So
and then the blob ate them. Yes. That's what you get.
Well, then they're watching like the meta, because it goes like to a meta horror movie with a guy with like a It wasn't a chainsaw, it was a hedge trimmer, but he's still wearing a hockey mask or something like that.
Yeah. I love when movies do that.
Yes. I've seen that in
ages. Garden implement and mask of some sort.
Exactly.
Like a baseball. So your dad loved Frankenstein, you said. Was he a horror fan or just like was it a thing for Frankenstein?
It was more the universal monsters, you know, the modern stuff. It's like, oh, you know, it's too gory, it's too violent. You know, he
likes the classics.
I know I showed him Scream and, you know, he was game to check out some stuff, but at some point, yeah, I just kind of knew his limits were.
Yeah, the universal monsters are definitely a much different tier of horror. Mm-hmm. No gore. Well, very little anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I actually really love watching them now. And like Psycho is one of my all-time favorite movies. Mm-hmm. So I think they all have their place. But yeah, they can be a little bit dated, especially the language. Like even the leap from like Frankenstein to Bride of Frankenstein, the language of film is like much more dramatically like
evolved. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
Did you participate in Halloween as a kid?
Yeah, definitely.
Favorite costume?
Ooh, probably I think like Jedi or Ghostbuster or something.
Yeah.
Okay. The typical 80s stuff.
Mm-hmm. Jedi tracks. That works.
I don't know. Are you guys parents?
Nope.
I am.
Yeah, I think Halloween is much more fun, I think, when you have kids than when you are a kid or just a single adult.
Definitely a different flavor of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I have it's much more
vicarious Halloween.
More now that my kids are 10, I have so much more fun walking around with them on a Halloween night than I think I ever did as a kid. Probably partly because I lived in Oregon, so it was pretty much always raining.
That could have something to do with it.
But now living like in California, it's like the only time of year I actually like go walking through my neighborhood and, you know, everyone's out kind of doing their thing. It's very special. I love it.
Did you have a least favorite costume when you were a kid?
None that I remember.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Not every question is going to land. Just never know till you ask.
Yeah.
Did you have any really scary dreams or recurring nightmares as a kid?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. I have a huge fear of snakes. And I definitely remember having a dream where I'm in the shower and snakes start coming out of the faucet. And I'm like showered in snakes.
What would Freud say about that?
Exactly. There's definitely something there.
So you really liked Indiana Jones.
Yeah. I'm sure it had something to do with that. Even that scene like makes me I'm better now, but like the part where, especially with the snakes like coming out of the wall, that part really freaks me out.
Yes, that's even the part now. I was thinking of. Wasn't there also a scene where one comes out of a skeleton's mouth?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Right next to him. Yeah, you do not even have to have a phobia of snakes to be creeped out by that. That shit's creepy.
Yeah. So like if I actually want to even like in a cage or something, like when I go to PetSmart to pick up dog food, like I literally cannot walk by that section.
Walk down the Was there ever a time in your childhood when you're terrified of something in real life?
I never like had a drowning incident or anything. I never had anything like that.
Okay.
Just, you know, usual childhood stuff.
Flipping that last question around, was there ever a time in your childhood when you felt exceptionally calm or safe or at bliss?
Well, hardly ever.
Okay.
Not uncommon. Childhood is stressful, to say the least.
Fraught.
No, my parents said that I was actually like a really easygoing kid. Like they were afraid of stranger danger with me a lot.
Because you just be like, hey, what's up? Oh, you got candy? Cool.
Yeah.
Well, here's a really weird story. My parents did do a lot of stranger danger like training, and there was like a movie they had me watch about a kid who got kidnapped and everything. And I always thought that's just what all kids kind of went through. And I know to a degree, but I was at a horror convention recently, and I was at someone's booth, and their like husband was there. And then after, later on, I went to go get a hot dog, and they happened to be sitting next to me. So I just start chatting them up. And he's a producer and editor, and he recently did a documentary about a serial killer. And I'm like, oh, interesting. And it turns out he lived in the neighborhood this serial killer was active in, and even went to the same church as where they eventually found that the serial killer went from. And it turned out that's the same neighborhood where I grew up. One of the girls was like just 2 years older than me that was kidnapped from literally like I did a map quest and everything within like less than a half mile from where we lived.
So your parents were right.
I asked my mom about it. Oh, and the girl had the same name as my sister.
Oh, that's nice.
Okay, what the fuck?
No, it was name was Michelle. This is a very, very common name at the time. And, you know, she was kidnapped after my sister was born. So it wasn't like some homage.
Still, though. Thing.
There wasn't like some like Freddy Krueger, you know, parent conspiracy. And I asked my mom about it. It didn't ring any bell for her, but who knows?
I'm not sure if that's better or worse.
Yeah, I know. She forgot about it, or I'm just making weird connections.
No, I mean, like, better or worse for her, because if she knew about there being a serial killer, you could say maybe she was protecting you and she didn't want you to freak out. But on the other hand, if she didn't know about it and you're telling her this story, then she's like, shit, I really should have been worried about it. So,
yeah. Real double-edged sword there.
Yeah. So the next two questions also come as a pair. We'll start with the negative one so we can end on the positive one. Do you remember the first person you hurt?
Physically or emotionally?
Either one.
Either or.
I'm sure both are probably my sister to some degree. You know, the
older yeah, it's always siblings.
Older sister, younger sister?
Younger sister. I don't remember. I do know there was a point where I had a friend over and we were all just kind of roughhousing and we picked her up and like one of us had a leg, the other one had the arm and we swung her and she hit the edge of the bed and chipped a tooth or something.
You know, kids, yeah, whatever.
And then I did tell her that mayonnaise was made out of snake's blood.
Okay.
So there's some mental torture there too.
That's a new one. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I don't know how or where I came up with that, but maybe I was doing the Batman thing where I'm going to use my greatest fear on my enemy.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. A little scarecrow action.
I'm Snake Man now.
So flipping that one around, do you remember the first person you helped?
Probably my sister. I do remember my sister had some kidney surgeries and they wanted to eat this Jello stuff. She didn't want to eat it, so my parents had me eat it.
Okay.
So.
See, look, your brother's eating it. It's not poison.
Right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I was the guinea pig, I guess.
Right. let's see. So, you had mentioned, you know, Universal and Godzilla and Abbott and Costello when you were, these movies when you were younger. So, this is maybe kind of the inverse. Some guests have reported a similar progression. Starting with enjoyment at the start, and then other guests start off with like fear at the start that then turns into enjoyment later. Do you remember if there was anything at the start, you know, like early on that actually did scare you, or was it always enjoyment at the start? I mean, when you were younger.
Yeah. As far as the Universal stuff, it was all just, you know, it was more just the being upset again against the persecuted monster. Right. But, you know, this kind of brings in a whole other aspect. There was a time where I was in middle school and I was, you know, when you're a kid and you're going to middle school, if you don't understand a lot of pop culture things that are happening around you or have been established. But I was a real big Trekkie at the time, especially like the next generation. And, you know, I was reading TV Guide or whatever it was on, and I saw that Patrick Stewart was going to be hosting a show called Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
So I asked my parents, what is Saturday Night Live? And, you know, my parents were like in college or whatever in the 70s. So they're very aware of it. So like, oh yeah, but you have to stay up late to watch it. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to try staying up late to watch, you know, the show called Saturday Night Live with Patrick Stewart. And when I was trying to stay up, you know, well, I'm not used to staying up that late. I was just kind of channel flipping later at night. And on Fox, there was a show called Tales from the Crypt that was being syndicated at the time. And I can't remember exactly which the first episode I saw. I remember like the batch of the shows I watched around that time.
Did you ever make it to SNL?
No, I mean, that night I did. Okay. I remember watching that. I remember watching Mad TV, but it was like, oh wow, this is an interesting mix of horror and sex and violence that I'd never really seen before.
Very much Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, on the Tales from the Crypt.
I mean, no, SNL
for Fox.
Yeah, that too.
So this is like, this is the syndication. So the show was definitely on for a couple of years by that point. I definitely stayed up to watch Patrick Stewart. And the only thing I really remember is he had a sketch where he's a sexy cake baker. And he baked like erotic cakes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which I think all of them were like men on toilets or something like that. with like Rob Schneider as like the customer asking for a funny, like a gag cake. And he just keeps getting one with men on toilets. Anyway, so I was like, okay, that's SNL. That's weird, but okay. Right. But then the next week I was like, I want more of that Tales from the Crypt show.
Right.
So that's why I kind of started coming back. But there was one episode, that scared me so bad. That I was in middle school, mind you, that like I had to sleep with the lights on. It disturbed me so much.
It's
the episode The New Arrival. It's I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but it's directed by the same guy who did The Changeling, which again is another horror classic. Probably one of the best like haunted house ghost story movies you'll ever see. And it had Zelda Rubinstein in it. He just recently passed away. I forget his name. I think it's Robert Wagner. I could be saying it wrong though. Yeah, it is about this mother who brings in a psychologist to help her with her problem child, who turns out to be much more than a child. But one of the coolest things I got to do for the podcast was I decided I want to face my fear. So I found the actress who played the child actor. Wow. It turns out she was a little person actor. She'd done like stunts for kids. So like she did doubled for Daniel Harris in the Halloween movies and for like Timmy for Jurassic Park, because the character pretty much like had a like white porcelain mask on the whole time. You know, they just had her kind of doing it. So I was able to track her down and have her come on the podcast and talk about doing that role.
So what scared you about that episode?
I mean, it's a spoiler. So do you want me to spoil it?
Yeah, it's like 40 years old now.
Yeah, people have had time to watch the episode.
Yeah.
It has a very nihilistic ending where again they're very much trapping this psychologist. It turns out they've been trapping other psychologists to try to help with this girl who turns out to be like an undead ghoul. Okay. In the episode, it's one thing to kill someone and tell some crypt. Okay, fine. They kill someone, they get their comeuppance. But it was a whole other level to kidnap this guy, strap him, and the impression is that he's never going to leave. And they're just going to like keep him there with this ghoul like sitting on his lap for the rest of his life. And that was like a level of like nihilistic torture that I never really considered before.
Yeah, it's like it's another dread entirely when you deal with those loss of hope.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, there's definitely some more extreme movies that I like think are good, but I never want to watch again, like Martyrs, Eden Lake, those kind of movies, which I think are very, very good movies, but they're just so disturbing. And you know, it's there's fates worse than death.
It's a little rough seeing Magneto get beat so bad.
I like that phrase, fates worse than death.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think that's all the stuff for the childhood section. So for teenage section, you'd mentioned Scream and Sleepaway Camp. Scream, as you said, was sort of the Rosetta Stone. Something that does come up in our interviews at different times is what I like to refer to as like gut level reaction versus auteur stuff, more cerebral. And it's at least initially, it sounds like the Scream thing is more of a cerebral thing for you, that you're like, oh, there's all this cool networking, you know, with all these other horror films, which is valid, but is a different kind of thing, if you will. Was there a gut level reaction to Scream as well, or was it all cerebral?
It is at least the first time you see it, you know, it is tense for sure. Human killers don't really scare me very much, typically. I mean, there's always going to be an exception, but the usual like stranger in the house, you know, I think it's partly just being a rather large man. You know, I'm not personally afraid very, very much, at least by other people. Okay. And that's a privilege I think I just happen to have, so that doesn't bother me.
Right.
So Scream, you know, I'm like, I could take care of those guys to a certain degree, you know.
It's just a guy with a knife, you know, tackle him, choke him out, maybe stab him.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So that's why, like, I think certain monsters are more supernatural stuff. And also ghosts don't really do a ton for me because there's no real rules around them. So it's never like, can ghosts really hurt you? They can be scary, but like, I don't feel endangered by a ghost. There's always exceptions in movies and stuff. But I need something like, I need more like a Texas Chainsaw to really get to me. Like, okay, I wouldn't want to fuck with Leatherface.
But he's like dying vulnerable. I mean,
yeah. And then there was, I think it was a New Year's Eve. I had my friend over. My parents went to a party or something, and I was babysitting my sister. And we rented, me and my friend rented The Exorcist, the first Friday the 13th, and Evil Dead 2.
Good choices.
And did like a whole like movie marathon, and that really, especially The Exorcist, that really scared the crap out of me. That's still, again, another favorite of mine that just unnerves me.
I'm guessing you don't put that in the same ballpark as the ghosts not scaring you.
Well, again, I'm talking like on averages. Well, and to me, again, The Exorcist is more, we talk about fates worse than death, like a possession. okay. You know,
loss of control.
Lots of control. And it's also like a very deeply spiritual movie, which I really connect with. So it works on very, very many levels. Also, like, you know, mental health, you know, watching someone you love deteriorate. There's a lot of different anxieties kind of wrapped up in there. I actually went to a screening of it in LA at a theater. It was in theater number 6. And within like the first 5 minutes, the projector broke. So we had to all like stand around. And this is really funny because we all just kind of were just milling around. There's an older gentleman with his wife there. And someone turns to him and says, "Hey, are you Michael Gross?" And he's like, "Well, yes, I am." And I was also a huge Tremors fan. Those that don't know Michael Gross from Tremors and like Family Ties. Yeah, but he just happened to be in the theater too. Really cool guy. So he just kind of entertained us with Tremor stories while we wait for them to fix the projector.
Ah, cool. All right. I didn't know where you were going with the thing, the part about the projector breaking it. I thought it was maybe there was some relevance to it being theater number 6.
Who knows? But it turned out to be a cool thing. But that's such an intense movie even now, I think. Like, yeah, maybe some of the effects are a little bit dated. But again, to me, it's there's a fantastic documentary about The Exorcist called Leap of Faith. And that's, you know.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Tremors for a minute there.
Oh, no, Tremors is also an amazing movie.
Awesome like for a different way.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I even read the book of The Exorcist. And again, I was so scared reading that book. And this is like as an adult that like I couldn't read it during the night because it gave me nightmares.
How old were you during that weekend when you saw those movies? It was Exorcist, Evil Dead 2, and something else?
Yeah, I was definitely in high school. Okay. So either a sophomore or junior. I can't remember exactly.
Right. Maybe like 15.
Yeah, probably 15, 16.
The third one was Friday the 13th, didn't you say?
Yeah, which, I mean, I might lose my horror card on this, but I don't think most of those movies are very good, per se.
Like, no, I totally
agree. They're mostly like kill vignettes.
Yes.
I mean, there's good
occasionally,
parts.
Yeah, there are good parts. I was like, just going to say, occasionally, like, I'll do a marathon of them and remind myself, like, these are not good.
Yeah, they're not good movies. There's definitely good, like once Pamela Voorhees shows up in the first one, then it gets good. But like, it's really dull. I will say I love part 6 because it's pretty much a parody of all the other ones. Mm-hmm.
I think they were definitely a product of their times. I mean,
yeah,
it's hard to understand if you weren't around back then, but. You know, those things were kind of pushing boundaries at that time.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. Go ahead.
I'll say I'm not poo-pooing anyone else's enjoyment. It's just more, there's just not much story. And this is where, this is a soapbox I like to get on, where I compare like the Nightmare on Elm Street movies versus the Friday 13th movies.
Yeah.
Wherein every Friday 13th movie takes place over like one night. And no one knows that they're in any danger. They're just going about their lives. Where, as opposed to the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, it usually takes place like over a couple of days, if not a week. Like you have time to have funerals. So you're able to experience the emotions of the other characters when they're losing their friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they're trying to figure out how do we solve this issue or, you know. So to me, there's a lot more story in the plot development. And there's much more that hang on the characters than there are in the average Friday 13th movie.
Yeah, for me, the Friday 13th, I don't say that it wasn't about empathy because you can potentially identify with people being murdered and, you know, empathize in the sense that I don't want that to happen. But like I say, there was no empathy in terms of reflecting on how it affected other people other than, you know, the people who like walk in and find the murdered bodies kind of thing, you know, like the scare there, or maybe like a 5-second conversation of, oh, did you see what happened? Or did you hear what happened? But there was no, you didn't really dive into it in the way that other movies do.
Yeah.
You know, I did want to ask about Evil Dead 2. Was there anything in particular you particularly liked about that movie?
Yeah. I mean, the filmmaking and the effects are, you know, so inventive. One thing is that if you listen to my podcast, my co-host make fun of me a lot for this is that I'm a very analytical thinker. So when I'm watching a movie, especially supernatural, I like to have rules that I understand what's happening. How is it happening? How does it stop? And it bugs me in the old dead movies because there aren't any real specific rules. Like, how do you become a dead? You play the record.
Yeah.
But like, how does one stop becoming? Because they change the rules every couple of movies.
They do. It's not really supposed to be meant about the structure or the rules of the Evil Dead. It's really more about the fun special effects and the creatures and the camp.
Right. So I appreciate those things, but that's why I think I don't watch them very often. Mm-hmm. That's why I like Tremors. Like, they come up like, okay, these things cannot see you. They can only hear you. So if you're quiet, you're okay. And if you do this, X, Y, and Z. So like, my brain, I think, likes that in the movie. Or like Jaws, you know, you stay out of the water, you're safe from the shark. Kind of things. So it's not like it's scarier per se that like there are no rules. It just doesn't interest me as much. But again, I appreciate from a filming perspective, you know, like when Evil Dead Rises came out, I rewatched all the Evil Dead movies.
Nice.
And I really love Army of Darkness because that's just
that's classic.
Just, yeah. It's just everything turned up to 11 and I'm here for it.
I think that's all the teen stuff too. So we can roll right into the adult years. If you were to pick maybe the top two or three things that really stood out to you now in your adult years in terms of horror, what would you pick?
Definitely when I was in college, we had a bunch of, I was in the fraternity and we had another chapter of our fraternity visiting us and we all decided we wanted to go see a movie. So we all got very inebriated on things.
As one does.
Went to go see a movie called The Ring on opening night.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it. Exactly. None of us had or knew anything about it.
Yeah. At the time, you're right.
And it scared the bejesus out of me.
Yeah.
Like,
it's shame all the sequels were so lackluster because the effect of the original Ring was just, it's still spooky, even on rewatches. Mm-hmm.
Like, especially the closet scare.
Mm-hmm.
I
comes out of nowhere. Like, you know, it's coming, but it still gets me.
Like, I fell out of my seat. That's I think the only time I was like, again, we're all a little hyped up and it just hit me so hard. I was scared shitless. Yeah, that's probably the most terrifying I've ever been in the theater. I think another memorable one a couple years later was seeing Saw for the first time. Again, never seen anything like that. Wasn't really, you know, there's no way you can be prepared for that kind of movie. And that was just kind of like, I remember I went with a coworker and she was like, she's like, that's too much. I can't handle that. And I was like, it was too much and I love it and I want more. Like, I tried
absolutely the second right. one. Yes.
When the second one came out, I tried to get her to go with me to see that one and she refused.
No.
And for my record, the second one is the best, in my opinion.
Okay.
At least my favorite.
Why?
When I say the best, everyone's going to have their opinion on the quote, the best, but on what I, my preference. So there's that. And then also around the same time, Shaun of the Dead, you know, again, we've never really seen a comedy, especially of that type.
I don't really know. I mean, there's Dale and Tucker and Dale, but I think that came out after Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly. But like, again, we've all seen Edgar Wright, you know, is just an amazing director, regardless of genre. So his directing, that comedy writing and that kind of spoof, but still being, it's still a good horror movie. If you took out all the humor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can still take it seriously.
You can still totally take it seriously. And I think that's kind of the trick, is you need to have a good horror movie with humor over the top. You can't have a comedy with some horror elements. I don't think that would work. That doesn't work.
I mean, isn't that what Abbott and Costello was?
Again, you got the comedy and you still have a very good...
Right, but the question is Abbott and Costello horror with comedy
on top?
Horror comedy.
Sorry, just had to play devil's advocate.
There's always an exception, but I'm just saying, like, in general.
Yeah. So why do you think Saw 2 was better than Saw 1?
I think especially now, Saw 1 is a very rough around the edges on some parts. Like, I think the first, like, half hour is very, very good. But I think once they try to, like, if you made that as, like, a short, which I think it was initially, it was just the two guys. But once you start opening up to, like, all this backstory and stuff, it gets a little muddled. I think the second one is a little more ambitious and a little more rounded out.
Okay.
And I just kind of like the house that they're in with all these different traps in different rooms.
So potentially a more cerebral side for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Other than the closet scare part of The Ring, what did you like about The Ring?
Again, it was a different type of story. Again, what we've seen before, it was much more, the dread in that was just so thick. And again, it's one of those things where when the first It movie came out in the 90s, you know, I was like around the age of those kids. I didn't watch the movie. I remember seeing the promos and stuff. I might have seen like a scene or two. And I was scared as that age. So I think, you know, part of it when I saw The Ring was, you know, I was kind of like halfway between childhood and adulthood. So you're scared for the mom and you're scared for the kid.
Right.
But like when I saw the It remake as a parent, it was scary the whole other level, being scared for the kids as a parent.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that's come up with a couple of our guests, that when you have a child, you know, it changes your opinion of certain horror movies. And you can watch, you know, somebody get their guts ripped out, somebody get their head smashed in. But if it has child violence, it's a no.
Right.
What was the other thing? Oh, Sleepaway Camp. That was the other thing where you were identifying with kids.
Yeah. And more, and that wasn't so much as like in danger, but like, you know, the things the kids would do.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys very familiar with that movie?
Somewhat. It's been a while.
Like there's a scene where they do an atomic setup.
Mm-hmm.
That's the stupid kind of crap that, like, you know, me and my friends did at summer camp.
Shenanigans.
Exactly. That's more where I relate to that movie. It just felt more true from the kid perspective.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else from the adult years stand out to you?
I mean, that's where I, you know, started listening to more podcasts. And, you know, I think as the horror fandom has evolved, where we now have like our own streaming channel like Shudder, and we're becoming more unified in ways. It wasn't just like, okay, let's all just read Fangoria together. It's, you know, we can all be in these horror communities. And that's where I got into like the Bloody Good Horror podcast. I became friends with them and part of their Slack community. And that's, you know, kind of the impetus for making my own podcast.
People still use Slack?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, kind of in the same boat. I thought I'd heard them. They were going out of business or something like that. Guess not. You know, I forgot I wanted to ask you about Texas Chainsaw Massacre. How old were you when you saw that?
I was around the same time when I saw Scream. Again, then obviously that was another movie referenced in there that I wanted to go see. And I think the first time it hit me like a ton of bricks. I didn't know what to really think of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's one of those movies, the more you watch it, the more you get out of it. And
because
it's so much layered, but also it's like hitting you. It's like a prog like metal song where it's just like loud and boisterous and just a lot of stuff coming at you, but the more you listen to, the more you pick out the different themes that are happening and whatnot.
Would you say it hits you over the head like a sledgehammer?
Yeah, exactly.
What are some of the layers that you like about it?
Yeah, where it's really a commentary about the perceived degeneration of the family unit, where the Sawyers are this like conventionally perverse family with like no mother figure, trying to hold on to their old ways of, you know, consuming meats or processing meat and breaking taboos. You know, they say cannibalism is like the ultimate taboo, or they're like, you have unconventional furniture and everything. And then like these so it's like this older generation that's like kind of their way of life is crumbling, and they have these hippie kids kind of running into them, and the two of them just can't figure out a way to coexist. Mm. So like in like post Vietnam era, like you have these two sides that are just not able to connect, and they're literally trying to consume each other for survival.
Ooh. Yeah. I like that metaphor. It's a good one.
Yeah.
The movie like is almost like apocalyptic in a way too. It's there's a lot of stuff happening in there, and even like when I like the part where they're driving and they're listening to the radio, and it's all just about this doom and gloom and like horrible world news of like hijackings and oil prices, and you know
the second pair to that question is ever terrified of something as an adult in real life that kind of leads right into that.
Yeah, exactly. There's lots of, you got options nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not like an overly political person, but I do like to be aware.
Yes.
There's a lot to be aware of.
Yes. Has there been a time in your adult life when you have been calm or safer in place?
Usually involves the success within my children, you know, as a father of adult needs children, you know, their successes and their joy, you know, is even more sweeter knowing how hard they've had to work for those things. Yeah.
Understand.
Now I've had like a personally steady career, but you know, when I've had some good achievements, they're always, you know, well earned and well enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. Going to do this pair of questions again, starting with the negative, so it can end on the positive. Do you remember the last person you hurt?
Ooh, it's probably my kid, because I forgot something I told him I would do with them. I probably told my daughter I'd watch. She's in this anime show called My Hero Academia.
Yeah, the big one.
And I can only watch so much of it at a time, and I need breaks. So I might have told her that we'll watch more later that day, and I just did not get around to it. Mm. Yeah. And that hurt me feelings. So.
Oh, gosh. She hasn't found out about One Piece, has she?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't watched either one, but I know of them both.
Over 1,500 episodes.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh
my God. I'm not going to watch this many. There's like,
good luck. It's almost.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much good TV too for like adults and stuff that like, but I like watching stuff with my kids. So my daughter got really into Wednesday Addams, the Netflix show.
I do like that show. It's good.
Yeah. It was really well done. And they dropped the trailer. I don't
really care for like the rest of the family, but Jenna Ortega absolutely nails it as Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not really focused on the rest of the family, but I would definitely give them more to do. The
show is named Wednesday after all.
Yeah. There is that.
Yeah. But yeah, they released a new trailer for the new season this week. My daughter, actually, I waited until my daughter got home to watch it, and she was like jumping up and down.
Cool. So flipping that last question around, do you remember the last person you helped?
I mean, you know, yeah. All I do is help my kids with stuff. So
still an acceptable answer for both.
Or my dogs. That's pretty much all I do. Help my kids and my dogs.
Ooh, we got to change the question now, Steve. Mm-hmm. I mean, are dogs people? Are they person? Do they have personhood?
Furry kids?
They have personality. I don't say they're person. It depends on what you mean by personhood.
Yes.
Do dogs just have the right to vote? No.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're not getting into, what's the word? Not cognitive.
Cognitive, yes, I guess.
Oh, shit. Consciousness? It's not the word I'm looking for either. Sentience? I think sentience.
Yeah.
They have emotions. They are emotional creatures.
Yeah. See, some people would argue that. I am in the camp that I think they do, but that's a whole other podcast.
But does that make them more valuable than a human?
Yeah.
So this next question is going to be over your entire life and not just about horror. It could be any genre. What movie have you watched more times than any other?
It's probably either Star Wars, because you only had so many things to watch when you were a kid, so... Mm-hmm. Especially on videotape. So I watched Star Wars like over and over and over again. I watched Scream over and over again. Jaws, I've seen many times.
Did you have any kind of a gut level reaction to either of these movies?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a kid, the adventure of Star Wars is what really gets you. And then, Jaws, I was definitely afraid to swim in bodies of large water, especially if I can't see my legs. Right. I think being eaten is a very primal fear that we'll have.
Yeah.
In the fact that, you know, again, Jaws is of the level of this could actually happen. There's nothing supernatural about it.
Right.
So it's all completely plausible. And Star Wars is just pure fantasy. So that kind of divorces that.
Mm. Kind of two favorites on opposite ends of the spectrum that way.
Yeah, exactly.
They complement each other.
Yeah. So I suspect I know the answer to this one, but I'll ask anyway. Not to put words in your mouth. If those are the ones you've watched more times than any other, would you say one of those is your favorite movie, or would you pick something else for favorite?
I feel comfortable with Jaws being
really. I thought you were going to go with Star Wars.
I think it's partly because I'm just if I had to watch between the two of them, I'd probably watch Jaws. I think Star Wars. I'd say it's showing its age, but I've seen it so many times and
a little burnout.
Yeah, I still think Jaws is still going strong. Where I still can watch that over and over and over again, where I think Star Wars, I think it's just, I think I put Star Wars in there because it was one of those movies you only had a few movies as a kid to watch. And of course mine was like dubbed over off TV or something like that. Would even like pay like the $100 it cost back then to buy a VHS.
Right. Do you see any, and this one going back to horror, but again, over your entire life, do you see any kinds of common threads about what you like? Cannibalism, occult, metaphysical?
No, I like all of those genres. I probably prefer sci-fi horror.
Okay.
Just because it tends to be a little more inventive.
Okay.
And they kind of like sci-fi as well. So you're kind of getting two bangs for your buck.
Yeah.
But again, I like more, not grounded per se, but at least like movies that kind of have a logic to them. That's just kind of how my brain works. So I go over like plot over substance, but I want both.
Right.
Or Flash, per se.
You mentioned that you weren't a fan of the word cerebral, but I did want to ask you if there was maybe some sort of family value relating to intelligence, or is that maybe something you've picked up on your own along the way? Because, you know, you've talked about, you know, sci-fi being more inventive. You like logic. You also talked about liking when movies have rules, you know, so logic in that sense as well. There's something else you'd said, too, that's escaping me that kind of leaned in that direction.
Yeah, I think again, a lot of that is my dad. He was an engineer. So like, yeah, there's a bit of that brain of like, you know, the things has to like fit together or else it's going to fall apart, like structurally and logistically and story wise. And, you know, if you really want to go even a step deeper, I'm Jewish. So there's a lot of like stuff with like rituals and, you know, laws and rules. And, you know, we do this because of this and it says here to do that. I don't necessarily adhere to all that, but I think that's just kind of a way of thinking of things, a framing.
Okay. Let me see. Did I skip anything? All right. So this would be where we would give the summary and then maybe talk about whether or not I'm picking up on anything or missing the point here. I think the biggest topic is a familial connection because, you know, like you just said about the, your dad being an engineer, there was that, but also the connection to the universe of monsters and Godzilla and stuff growing up. And it, obviously you have, you know, gone further than him in some of these directions, but you know, that's a big part of where it started. The other sort of minor, like we talk about a major and a minor, like a college degree, the minoring topic seems to be about the, you know, maybe power, but I was thinking the word inescapable, you know, you were talking about fate's worse than death. Maybe there being some sort of a, I don't want to use the word fight, but avenue to fight, like an angle, like what's my angle? Like talking about having, liking to have rules and how does it stop? I don't know. That part I'm struggling to find a good word for.
Yeah, those, you're onto something.
Do those two things seem the most accurate for you? Do you think there's something else I'm leaving out? Do you think there's something else you'd add?
I mean, I guess I don't know if everyone thinks this way, but I do think there's like, I feel like most people feel like they have, you know, a light and a dark side that we all kind of struggle with to some degree. Okay. Mm-hmm. Kind of a Jungian shadow, if you want to go that way. The other. And, you know,
lines up with Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I've always found gray areas to be a little tricky. So I like to kind of know where things stand.
Mm.
But obviously life isn't always black and white.
Right. So having the rules helps you identify, you know, the black and the white and not be gray.
Yeah. You know, so, and also, you know, helps me find places where I can bend them.
That too.
not to say I'm always trying to be, you know, on one side or the other.
No, one of my favorite quotes is it's the child's job to learn the rules and it's the adult's job to learn when to bend them, not break them, bend them.
Yeah.
So if these topics are accurate for you, then the follow-up question is, why do you think these are important to you?
That's a great question. I don't know. I mean, we're all kind of trying to figure out how to be and how to, you know, interact and be in a society. Mm. And I definitely think I look to movies as, you know, examples. It's funny because obviously they're scripted, so they're like artificial, but even someone creating them has basing it on some sort of experience or life point of view. One of my other non-favorite horror movies is Easy Rider.
Okay,
good.
Which I think really opened my eyes a lot when I saw that and informed my worldview in different ways.
How so?
Kind of a little bit countercultural views and not quite taking what society is handing you per se, and not being emboldened necessarily to, you know, what culture is offering or at least trying to sell you on.
Mm. Which also kind of lines up with what you said about Texas Chainsaw Massacre and the two families.
Mm-hmm. And like, what is freedom?
Yeah.
And people, the people who are saying people looking for freedom, people who think they found it but are just in another in their own traps or in their own you know, systems.
Tying in with the new arrival.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think probably one of my biggest subconscious fears is being trapped. Like, here's one for you. So, again, my son is special needs, and there was a special camp for kids with special needs. It's fully accessible, and they had a family camp where either an aide or family member could go with that child to the camp for a whole week, or as little time or as much time as you wanted within that week. Okay. So I'm like, you know what, I'll take a week off of work and I'll go to camp and it'll be, you know, spend this whole week with my son and he'll be able to do, you know, have the time of his life. But something about being there and just kind of repeating the same day over and over and over again, not being able to leave in like
Groundhog Day
a little bit.
Yeah. That feeling of being trapped and like, I didn't have a car there or anything. It was much more stressful than I would have thought. So. Yeah, it's like I in hindsight, I'm like, okay, maybe 2 days, 3 days would have been enough.
It's funny that you say that because it's how often I am with family. Like if I have an extended holiday vacation, like two or three days, we're good. Anything past that, we start getting on each other's nerves.
Yeah.
What's that old idiom about, you know, visiting family and fish?
Oh my God. I was trying to say that as you were. Yeah. Family and fish tend to stink after 2 to 3 days. My dog is saying it.
I have never heard that before. I thought you were going to say like, don't spend enough time with family. Like longer than you would leave your fish unattended. Like you got to go back and feed your fish. Or
yeah. Oh, same difference. But
yeah. They both work.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Let's see. So, next follow-up question would be why horror? These are the things that are, important topics to you.
Yeah. I think,
or can you, or do you explore them in other genres?
I mean, I do, but I just think horror is so much more inventive of taking fears and ideas. I mean, this is what sci-fi used to be really good at, but they just haven't done much with it lately, or at least like sci-fi just tends to dovetail with horror anyways, where you can use the ideas of, you know, any topic you really want and kind of Trojan horse it with a horror movie.
Yep.
You know, I think there's been a lot of trauma horror over the last like 10 years. I think it's been a big, like, you know, like A24 and those kind of things where like trauma is the real monster that just happens to be, you know, represented in some manifestation, like the Babadook.
Yeah.
It's probably the biggest one. And that's when, like, when I saw the first Smile movie and I thought it was like, remember, it was like those epic movies that came out in the 2000s where it was like a parody. To me, that one seemed like a parody of like the trauma horror monster tropes. And I thought the movie's like so over serious about it. I thought it was like unintentionally funny. I think the second one's actually really, really good, but the first one I thought was a bit overblown.
A little bit. There were some tropey bad decisions too. Like, why would no real people don't do this? We do.
Right.
So another word that's coming to mind is pedagogical lessons in life. You know, how do I make it through this world? Finding our way in life. Educational, maybe. Better way to put it, instructive.
Yeah, well, I think that's another reason why I think a lot of people like myself like horror is we're able to like experience things that hopefully we won't have to experience, but like see how other people react to it and kind of learn from that.
Yeah, that's another thing that's come up in several podcasts is like an interest in horror or an intrigue in horror can be thought of as cathartic because like you have that morbid curiosity about a horrible thing and you get to experience it vicariously through horror movies.
That's actually also interesting compared to like combined with what we were just talking about where, you know, up until recently, you know, it's how do I cope with the monster outside? And, you know, if trauma is the new trope in horror and trauma is the real monster, it's okay. How do I cope with trauma? Which is an interesting take on that.
Horror is healing.
Right. Yeah, no, I definitely
potentially.
Yeah, it's kind of like exposure therapy.
Yeah.
Where like, you know, we might not necessarily have a zombie outbreak, but we've had viral outbreaks and, you know, we're all kind of curious about like what would it have taken to get to apocalyptic levels or like, you know, I was during like the start of the pandemic, I was definitely keeping my gas grill, you know, I definitely wanted to make sure I had like extra gas in case, you know, power went out or something happened.
And toilet paper. Like, you got to make sure you have all the toilet paper.
Yeah.
17 pounds.
That's not usually an issue in my house. Having, we have this many people.
True. Good point.
Well, actually, it could be an issue if you don't have a ready supply.
Right. No, yeah, that's true, too. But there was, like, you know, if power shut off for a day or two, like, you know, those are the kind of things you kind of, that horror kind of helps you think about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so if we were to sum it up, man, struggling with my words there. So if I were to sum it up, some familial connection, finding our way in life might also tie in with that a bit. Intelligence, preparation. Really, the last question we ask here is, do you think that there's anything that you said earlier or anything that you were planning on saying earlier in the call that, you know, didn't get a chance to say, conversation took a left turn, that kind of thing?
I mean, we haven't really talked about the podcast, and I think that's a big part of my horror
journey. I'm sorry. Well. Normally, we do give a spot at the start and the end to talk about whatever it is that you're currently working on, and I would have gotten that would have been the next thing, but I forgot to do that at the start of the call. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. I was just waiting for it to, like, come up.
Yeah, yeah. Organically, but it
did. Yes. In its own time.
Yes. So how does that relate to...
Well, I think this actually dovetails a lot with what we've been talking about is, you know, I started listening to podcasts and getting, you know, parts of different horror communities, specifically, like I said, the Bloody Good Horror podcast. Mm. And they have a very active Slack group for their patrons. And I was just starting to get really into the Slack group when the pandemic hit. And when that happened, you know, that was like, that became one of my biggest social outlets, because, you know, I'm from Oregon, but I had moved to California, so, like, I don't have any, like, deep root friends. I had friends down here, but, like, none that I would go bunker with during a pandemic kind of situation. And all my family, you know, is in another state.
Can relate. I'm currently living in Ohio, and my next nearest friends and neighbors are 6 hours away.
Yeah, so it can be, especially when you don't have that option to physically be there, you know, and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think we all kind of look for digital avenues. So that's when, you know, that became my big, well, my new social outlets for a lot of people. I think we're all kind of searching for that. Mm-hmm. And then on Saturday nights, we'd start doing a weekly trivia night over Zoom. And again, that was like my time to, like, outside of work and family, to have social interactions. Mm-hmm. Was on these, like, you know, it was a very loose horror trivia. Like, we kept score, but it was very loose. And we gave each other, the joke was like, how many ridiculous hints could we give each other to try to help everyone out? Mm. And we get serious for like the last like 10 minutes, and that was kind of it. And I had the idea for a podcast. And like, I think before I moved in with, you know, my now wife, and, you know, before I had the kids and everything, I did like the blogging a little bit. I'm not a very good writer per se, but I have ideas, but writing didn't come very naturally to me. But one of the ideas I had was to do a blog where I reviewed every episode of Tales from the Crypt.
Okay.
And that just kind of, like, you know, rattled in my head. And then now that the barrier to podcasting has become, you know, somewhat pretty much lowered, I was like, you know what? Let me think about doing a Tales from the Crypt podcast. Mm-hmm. And I was very good friends with some of the people from the horror trivia. I'm like, well, there's these two guys I've become good friends with. Let me see if they want to do it. Mm. And me being me, I created a PowerPoint presentation that I made to present to them about my ideas and what I wanted to do with it.
Well, it's helpful.
Yeah.
Well, and that visual aids.
And they're like, sat through it, and they're like, dude, you have me at Tales from the Crypt podcast.
You go through all this effort, PowerPoint and everything, and they're just like, no, I'm in. I'm good.
Yeah. I find that doing those kind of things, especially like professionally, help are almost more beneficial to me to organize my thoughts and my ideas than for the audience to some degree. I mean, some audiences, you know, it's very helpful for if I'm making a big presentation, but sometimes just getting it all out on quote paper, digital paper is the real beneficial part.
So before I was going to hit the closing, in which we would give you a spot to talk about your podcast and other things you're working on, the sort of last question is, has there been anything that you've thought of earlier in the conversation that you didn't get a chance to say? Maybe you were going to say something and then the conversation took a left turn. It was just an opportunity to.
Well, I think a lot of this conversation has been about our journey and our transformation, mm-hmm. our kind of evolution, especially as horror fans. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things, you know, I started the podcast and, you know, we're still going strong 3+ years later. We finished the entire Tales from the Crypt series. So now we're doing other anthology style TV shows like Creepshow and Twilight Zone. And we're doing Black Mirror right now with some other movies kind of thrown in to break things up. And then I've become very good friends with the original producers of Tales from the Crypt and helped them start their own podcast, the How Not to Make a Movie podcast, mm-hmm. which we mentioned earlier. So it's been very cool to like kind of become part of the story almost of the, yes. of the show that I love and like inspired me to do this. It's kind of like, I can't remember what it's called, the snake eating its own tail.
Yeah.
It's kind the of, you know, becomes, yeah, it's kind of becoming a full thing. And like, you know, one of the things I like about, I know I love doing the podcast and everything, but then, you know, being able to be part of the horror community, I'm not saying I'm like a big name or anything, but to be able to, you know, come on other people's shows and, you know, get invited to like go do screenings and stuff here and there. And, you're talking about doing like big guest interviews. There was a movie that was being shown. It was kind of an indie movie that had, Tony Todd in one of those last big performances. You know, so mm-hmm. Kane Hodder was in it as well. So I was able to get like, you know, a press thing for that. And then I was texting someone, I didn't know who it was, about bringing a plus one. And I was told, oh yeah, I'm with a podcast. Is it okay if I have a chance to talk to Mr. Hodder or anything? He's like, actually, we have a room at this hotel and we're going to do an interview with a major horror outlet, but they just had to cancel on us. Do you want to come down?
Aha, nice.
And I was like, yes, please. Except I've never done this like in person.
Right.
And actually in that conventions, I like to go up to say hi to people, especially if their table is like slow. But Kane Hodder is someone I've always been intimidated by. Just because Jason was just such a big thing. And
yes.
It's funny because he's not a tall guy. I'm like almost a foot taller than Kane, maybe
really? Not,
but I'm at least a good 6 inches.
Yeah.
But he just has like a personal intensity.
Yes.
So I was like, you know, I'm still going to do it. And I went there and everything. And he like looks at, we connect. Like he knows, I'm sure he didn't know what I look like, but he knows that I noticed him. Mm. And he like, we connect and he looks, as I'm walking by, he looks at me, he says, "You are one Sid Haig looking motherfucker." I was like, that, sir, is that's a compliment.
Fantastic.
And I thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I got to do a really cool interview. Unfortunately, the room they chose was in the back room of a restaurant that was all glass. The audio wasn't great.
Yeah.
But again, to be in Kane's presence and get to talk to him and get to really know him. And, you know, mm-hmm. I think he has so much more to offer than just, you know, like horror killer stunt guy. Like, I think he's actually really funny and I would love to see him do like a comedy.
Yeah.
Like, we were talking about the idea of him and Robert Englund doing like a road trip comedy movie.
Oh my God, please make that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can see that.
Ooh, and they can get pulled over by a cop that's played by Doug Bradley.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's something there that someone needs to do before you know, while all these people are still around.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think like kind of the final evolution of my, at least I was not, maybe not final, but like where I'm at now is like being at least tangential to all these people who are, you know, the big names in the horror and being able to have like a smidge of access.
Yes.
Is, you know, something as someone who lives in Los Angeles, it can be very, very fun.
Mm-hmm. Especially out there. Yeah. I mean, I can relate in general. You know, we just recently released an episode with S.A. Bradley, who wrote a book called Screaming for Pleasure. And then the subtitle is Horror Makes Us Happy. I think there's something else after that, but it's escaping me at the moment. But, you know, when we first started doing this podcast, I had researched that name to see we'd come up with a name, liked it, decided to see if it had been in use, did notice that it was in his subtitle, decided to go ahead and roll forward with it. And he was the one that actually had talked me into, like, I was planning on maybe writing a book after, like, if we do this for 10 years, one of the things that we've often said on this podcast is that we've got three goals. The first is that talking to different creators in the business, fans of theirs might get to hear them share something that they haven't shared on other podcasts. The second is that we don't shy away from difficult topics. So if somebody brings up a difficult topic, we address that in as healthy a way as we can, and maybe somebody will get something out of that. And then the third thing that we're hoping to do with this podcast is sort of, you know, we're keeping a spreadsheet of all the different, you know, final summaries that we come up with and trying to identify, you know, not everybody's going to fall into the same bucket, but what are the buckets? How many are there? What are, you know, trend, which ones are more common or less common? And I had mentioned to SA that I was, you know, tracking this kind of stuff, and hopefully after, you know, 10 years, we could have some interesting data that we give back to the community. And he suggested, you know, why wait that long? You probably, because we just recently passed our 130th, I think, episode.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. So he's like, you've got enough, you know, you're not trying to put in a scientific paper, peer review paper.
And 10 years in podcasting is a very long time.
Yes. So, but the idea I thought then at that point was, well, actually he's making a good point, because what we could do is we could do a book now saying, here's what we've learned in the first 5 years. And then if we do wind up making it 10 years, write a second book then and saying, okay, did the stuff that we picked up on in the first 5 years, did that pan out or did it wind up changing? Mm-hmm. So, but to your point about having these different connections with the people that we've talked to, you know, building these relationships, it's a very cool thing. And, you know, if at some point I wind up doing the convention circuit where I'm selling a book next to the people that we've interviewed, that's pretty cool too, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So. Yeah, it's cool because there's a woman who's writing actually a book right now about the history of Tales from the Crypt, the show. Ah. And I've helped her, you know, get connections with a lot of people. And, you know, been able to help her out quite a bit. So I feel really, you're talking about helping people out. So that feels really cool to be part of that.
We are going to put together a bio page for you, and we'll link to whatever it is that you'd like to link to. Mm-hmm. I'll get together with you off the line to put that together, and I'll send you the link when we get it all built. Excuse me. Before I hit the closing, you want to go ahead and let everybody know what you're currently working on?
Mostly, again, the Dads from the Crypt podcast, and again, supporting the How Not to Make a Movie podcast. Again, on Dads from the Crypt, we're doing the new season of Black Mirror. So we're doing like two episodes, and then we'll do a movie, and then two episodes, and then the movie, just to kind of break things up a little bit. There's just so many damn movies out there that we like. Well, like I said, we're doing old movies like Fright Night. Sometimes we'll do new movies, especially if there's an anthology that comes out we really like. Mm-hmm. We hop on that bandwagon. And yeah, we all try to keep it light and fun. One of the things we do a lot is dad advice. We a lot of horror fans are in that range of being, you know, fathers, or at least like, you know, getting towards the more middle aged stuff. So we like to kind of be a positive place for that, and give people a space to hopefully hear some good, or maybe not so good, at least like some honest, more honest than good, I would say. Dad chat.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you to anybody out there listening. Do come visit us. Try that again. Thank you again for joining us. Thank you to anybody out there listening. Please do come visit us at horrormakesushappy.com. If you go to the episodes page and look for Jason Stein, we'll have a bio page for him and link to whatever it is that he wants us to link to. There's also the link tree link on the front page that'll take you to our Discord and all the places that the podcast is hosted and all kinds of fun stuff. And if nothing else, tell a friend.